Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 807, May the 25th, 1987. Before I begin with the bulk of the program, I just want to mention a letter I received from Dreyer's Grand Ice Cream headquarters in Oakland, California. Dreyer's was putting on a campaign of a low-calorie ice cream, and they wanted to show several people who allegedly were losers. And as part of their big campaign, they had hired Melvin Dunmar, the gentleman who said that he saw Howard Hughes in Utah, which he never had done, and he was a loser in the stake of millions of dollars. And the other person was John Ehrlichman, a Watergate defendant who eventually went to jail, and they were using his face for the promotion of ice cream. Well, as soon as I read that, I was simply furious. I mean, really angry. And I called Dreyer's, the office that managed the public relations that allegedly was making this commercial, and indicated that John Ehrlichman did crimes that he never was punished for, how he framed a black man, Elmer Davis, to serve time, already 3 years when I met him, in Folsom Prison for allegedly breaking into the offices of Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist in Beverly Hills. And I explained that Elmer had never been on Bedford Drive, and that the Beverly Hills police locked him up in a California prison, a black man taking the penalty for John Ehrlichman and E. Howard Hunt and the White House burglars. And I said that Ehrlichman's face associated with these commercials doesn't make him a loser. He gets the residuals and a big fat check, and that he never, as I say, ever was really punished for the terrible things that they did. Well, following the phone call, I got a letter this week. And I share it with you only to indicate that expressing your feelings doesn't always pay off, but sometimes it does. And when it does, it's rewarding, because I don't think enough people make the energy or effort to express their feelings in these matters. The letter was from W.F. Kronk, president of Dreyer Ice Cream. He wrote, "Dear Ms. Brussel, I sincerely thank you for your call indicating your dissatisfaction with Dreyer's Grand Light television commercial. I understand the depth of your concern and appreciate your taking the time to call. At Dreyer's Grand Ice Cream, we have always been concerned with our customers' feelings towards our product, our advertising, and our company's reputation. We spend considerable time trying to be as personally responsible as possible. Given your thoughts and those of others, we have decided to discontinue immediately the use of John Ehrlichman in our Dreyer's Grand Light advertising campaign. While we received some positive feedback, and in spite of the fact that the introduction of our new product has met with extraordinary success, the intensity of concern over the Ehrlichman segment has caused us to reach this decision. Once again, I thank you for taking time to share your concern with us." I think that was a very nice letter. I'm going to send him a copy of the article I wrote for Playgirl, "Is Howard Hughes Dead and Buried Off a Greek Island?" That was published 2 years before Vance Cooper was cashed in under the name of Howard Hughes at flying already dead from Mexico to Houston, Texas. And I'll also send him my article from The Realist, "Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped?" to show my concern about John Ehrlichman. But again, I bring this up because each person could do a little bit more. I know I do a lot, but I can't do too much. And it is a point that people don't take advantage of the telephone, of the postage stamp. They sit and mumble by themselves most of the time, sometimes with one other person, two if they're lucky, and don't even take a chance to express how they feel about certain things coming all around them. There was an article in, There's an article in Newsday that is very important in terms of the Iran-Contra mentality. Newsday isn't available to very many people. It was reprinted in the San Francisco Chronicle, titled "Report of Gruesome Cover-Up of the CIA in the Nicaraguan War." Two former Contra leaders have accused the CIA of ordering a gruesome cover-up scheme that Costa Ricans say apparently concealed the Americans' deaths in the Contra rebels' war against Nicaragua. The incident involves the crash 3 years ago of a United States government-owned airplane during a covert mission. In interviews with Newsday, Eden Pastora and his top lieutenant, Carol Prado, said that CIA officials directed them to mutilate the corpses of crash victims. the CIA orders said to remove jaw bones and the teeth of dead men. Pastor and Prado identified the two CIA officials stationed in Costa Rica, including the CIA station chief, who claimed they gave their group the order to mutilate the bodies so they couldn't be identified. These are American soldiers talking about the mutilation of Americans so that the families or people won't know, and it's on Memorial Day, this particular day, and it's very timely. The article says Costa Rican authorities said Pastora's guerrillas were the first to reach the wreckage of the DC-3. It went down March 24, 1984, in the jungle a few miles from the Nicaraguan border. The bodies were taken out of the plane and burned, some of them twice. Physical evidence was removed or destroyed by Costa Rican investigators by the time they arrived, and bodies were removed from the scene by an unidentified helicopter, witnesses said. The statement of Pastor and Prado, combined with new information from Angel Edmundo Solano, Costa Rica's security minister at the time of the crash, represents the strongest indication that there were American deaths in Nicaragua that were covered up by the U.S. government. And, of course, the CIA says no comment. Villagers went to the crash scene. They told the Costa Rica government they saw bodies of men who looked like Americans before the burning took place. One of the few pieces of physical evidence that was overlooked by the guerrillas were fragments of a child's letter and poem written in English. A socialist member of Costa Rica's Congress, Sergio Ardón, notified the authorities of the crash before it became public knowledge, told the Costa Rican press at the time that his Contra sources said at least one American had died. An American freelance journalist in Costa Rica, Martha Honey, and this article in Newsday doesn't identify her as having this immense lawsuit by the Christic Institute. They make it look like she's a journalist apart from those particular Contras that have been indicted in their case. But Martha Honey said that Felipe Vidal, a Cuban-American who led Contra troops, told her in confidence that Americans had died in the crash. Congressional investigators identified Vidal, who would not be reached for comment, as a CIA operative. You know, this gives a different dimension to the attempted murder of Eden Pastora and Martha Honey the night of the bombing at La Prensa in Costa Rica. Maybe because they knew about these deaths, she being a journalist down there, it gives a different reason for the bombing, trying to wipe out these witnesses also to the early death of the Americans in previous actions of the CIA. The article goes on, Prado, Pastora's former aide, said the plane's pilot was a friend of his, Renato Torrealba, a Nicaraguan married to an American. He was CIA's chief pilot at the time. He had sophisticated air navigation system, but it crashed. Prado and Pastora said the CIA officials used pseudonyms in dealing with the Contras. One CIA who directed the cover-up was a South American who used the name Ivan Gomez. Pastora said another official involved was Gomez's boss, CIA Costa Rica station chief, who used the name Thomas Castillo. The World War II vintage DC-3 was painted with Canadian markings. And remember the Bay of Pigs, how we took off the identification of planes coming from Miami, American planes. This one had Canadian markings and a serial number when it crashed. An aviation title company searched Federal Aviation Administration records. At Newsday's request, the plane had not had a Canadian owner since 1979, and this was 1974. The title report listed the most recent owner as an Indianapolis man named Robert Branch. Now, Robert Owen, who's been testifying, said that he worked for a Congressman Quayle from Indiana, and he introduced him to a constituent, John Hull, who had the airstrip and the weapons, the drug traffic, assassination plans coming out of his ranch. So Indianapolis has a certain contact in this area, so maybe that should be examined further. The U.S. Assistant Attorney Charles Gudlow, an assistant U.S. attorney in Indianapolis, confirmed that the federal government took custody of the plane from Branch from Indianapolis in July 1983, before the craft had allegedly been used in drug deals. So that is just the story today, coming out, removing the jaws and the teeth, and then cremating them once, and then cremating them twice, so that Americans at home wouldn't know what is going on. Now, One of the most important segments of this whole Iran-Contra story, of course, is that corporation TCI with its subsidiary IIS that becomes Stanford Technology, then Stanford Technology Trading Group. I'm just going to run through a few articles pertinent to that team because I want to do more on Iraq and the Persian Gulf for most of the broadcast. I'm just going to give you the titles and I'll go into details later. But Albert Hakim this Wednesday is going to be on the stand. And here are just a few articles about this team out of Stanford Technology this week. The Monterey Herald and, of course, the wire services today said Congress committees want General Secord to return as a witness. His testimony is being questioned. And after John Singlam came up and Mr. Calero, they want more from Richard Secord. That will be a high trick, given the secrecy of this corporation and how it was set up, but they know he's lying. Another story from the New York Times, a little item, Secord's companies. The Presidential Records Act obviously does not apply to Richard Secord, retired Air Force officer, who testified before the Select Committee. Mr. Secord told of how he controlled a network of 10 foreign secret companies by the involved with the Iran-Contra affair, without ever having a signature as appear on a single piece of paper. Secord has a documented connection to two American companies, and he's sensitive about press reports of their corporate affiliations. In his testimony, he acknowledged he was half owner of Stanford Technology Trading Group, a company in Northern Virginia, and a former director of Stanford Technology Corporation, a California company, again, the subsidiary of Otto von Bolschwing's TCI. He said the names of the two companies were confusing, but he nevertheless expressed some displeasure and how often it's reported in the press incorrectly. Secord's business partner, Albert Hakim, an Iranian-American businessman, added to the confusion when he talked to the investigators in Paris. Hakim, who controls Stanford Technology, is half owner with Secord in the trading company. They're both 50-50 in both, and there's no difference except adding the word trading company, TC, and Vienna, appropriately called Vienna, Virginia, for their offices. Hakim told investigators of other corporate entities he controlled with similar names, Stanford Technology Corporation S.A. in Panama, Science Technology Trading Group Incorporated, and Stanford Technology Corporation Services S.A. in Switzerland. As he was going through a list of 10 corporations with the committee investigators, Hakim interrupted at one point and said of one company, the name was used to create confusion. There's a long article in Spotlight by Warren Howe, Pivot Man Identified as Agent, and I'll do more with you on that later. The Pivot Man is Albert Hakim, of course, from Stanford Technology, and the importance of this article that I really want to spend a half hour or so on is that Hakim was given a large amount of money in 1977 by the Olin Corporation, O-L-I-N Corporation, a giant Connecticut chemical and weapons conglomerate. Now, the head of the Olin Foundation is William Simon, a Knight of Malta, a member of the AmeriCares funding the Contras, a very important person in the whole structure of our government, former Secretary of the Treasury, Board of the Helionetics, Board of Western, along with Western Gold, similar to John Singlaub and Edward Teller, Teller being on Helionetics with Simon. And the Olin Corporation that is directly linked to William Simon gave Albert Hakim, one account I have is $6 million, another is at $1 million, but he allegedly took many millions, which appeared as a swindle and never went to jail. Then Albert Hakim was used by the White House for these other operations. So that in all in technicality, or trying to prove this fact would be difficult, but was William Simon certainly the backbone of our intelligence operations and also on the board with Reed Irvine of Accuracy in Media? Was he giving this huge sum to Albert Hakim still in Iran? So when the Shah fell, or in the eventuality he did, or even if not, then Hakim comes all the way from Iran to Palo Alto, to Silicon Valley, and just happens to buy the subsidiary that Mr. John Paul Getty and Mr. Senecas from Fairchild Schlumberger and from ITT and the officers of the Defense Department He simply buys his company, and then he's back in business with Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins and Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple. A very important article, and as I say, I'll go back to it more. A New York Times May 8th head says, quizzing of Secord is seen as a conspiracy case. And I bring that up because very often the subject comes up about what is a conspiracy and what isn't. And on David Emery's program a few weeks ago, the talk show part, there was a discussion about conspiracy theories and conspiracies. I am very proud to be investigating conspiracies, even if other people deny that there are such things as conspiracies. And the New York Times is writing about a conspiracy, and they do, in fact, exist. I don't know why anyone has to hide behind the fact that you investigate conspiracies. The New York Times and LA Times covered a story, also Moses Syndicate. Secord seeks to bar scrutiny of Swiss bank data. He said on the stand he would share his information of his bank accounts, and now he's backing out. Another article from the Oregon newspaper and the San Jose Mercury. Secord and Hakim tried to buy 10,000 acres up near Seattle. Retired Major General Secord and Los Gatos businessman Albert Hakim, and they were going to buy this territory for at least $5 million, bordering on Indian land, working with another person up in that area. His name is John Miracle, a Seattle attorney who represented these three. Secord said he just has pittance in his bank. He didn't make a profit. And while the Iran-Contra affair was going on, they were shelling up. They intended to be part of a $5 million deal of timberland, which adjoins the Quinault Indian Reservation in the state's Olympic Peninsula. Approximately 3,000 acres of the parcel can be harvested. So they do have money to invest, and many corporations, even though the Iran-Contra affair may only go into a few of them. Also, Spotlight has a long article. Secord dates Iran arms deal to 1985, but the record shows the deal started in 1981. I'll get back to all of these in detail, but I just want to say that General Secord was in on that October 80 surprise, whereby the hostage rescue mission was completely blown, where Jimmy Carter didn't get the necessary points and popular approval to win the election against Ronald Reagan. Robert Keith Gray's name is on the papers of the Contragate hearings, the Iran scandal at the time. Edwin Meese is also William Casey. And the there's a very good article available soon. I don't know how soon it'll be reprinted, but Barbara Honecker here on the peninsula has written a brilliant article on the October 80 surprise. And of course, involved there is Mr. Secord. And so that the money that would flow to the Iranians could be blackmail money. Richard Allen is very much a part of that, and there are good articles on that I haven't even been able to get to. Another story from the San Francisco Examiner, May 24th, Secord denies gouging rebels on arms sales. Now, Secord and Hakim had some control over the purchases because John Singlaub testified last week that he could get weapons for the Contras if the purpose was weapons for these poor, bleeding Contra fighters. He could get them at a given price, and yet Oliver North had to transfer the weapon sales to Secord and Hakim, who charged twice the price. And so the question is, if Oliver North is so patriotic, if Robert Owen is so patriotic, if all these donors are so patriotic, what was the necessity to pay twice the price when the money was available from other countries particularly? Why double the cost? Why did it have to go to Hakim and Secord? The answer to that lies into the riddle of how TCI and IIS became Stanford Technology Trading Group and the nest of people, the real high military defense, and what they do in this tangled web of espionage. Also, Secord testified about shredding papers. We know about Ollie North's shredding party. And Washington Post had a story May 8th, shredding unrelated to Contra probe, Secord asserts. Well, try and prove that one. Now, just a few topic articles that are currently calling my attention. I want to mention them to you. I'll go back to them later. As I say, I want to get to Persian Gulf story. A very good article by Mary McGrory in the Washington Post, May 22nd, 1985, titled "A Sneer on the Stand." Ollie's yuppie agent, that's Robert Owen, flaunts his double dealing. The committee permitted him to turn the occasion into something between a Contra rally and a meeting of the Oliver North Fan Club. And I'll do more on that article later. There's an organization called the American People's Right to Know. I hope you have a pencil ready. I'm going to give you some addresses on the program. If I go too fast, send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll have them on the printed bibliography sheet for this evening. It's a group set up by Corliss Lamont, Beth Lamont, and Edith Tiger, Box 42, Cathedral Station, New York, 10025. And they want you to send or write to them. They have listed in the past three decades at least seven covert wars or military aggressions which have been initiated, going to the Vietnam War, the Bay of Pigs, the Marine intervention in the Dominican Republic, the U.S. bombing of Cambodia. They list President Nixon, not Henry Kissinger's idea, the secret war against Nicaragua from 1981 to 87, the U.S. troops' invasion of Grenada, and the bombing of Libya. And you can write to them and get more information. They said this is a violation of presidential policies. And as I say, the address is here. There's no fee to send, but you can write. The Washington Post has a long article this past week. PTL paid $120,000 to Capital Liaison. This article is May 13th, 1987. And this is the connection of the PTL to George Bush's office. A consultant, Peter B. Thiele, received $120,000 in fees from PTL. In the past 18 months, Thiele served Vice President George Bush's press secretary until 84. And then it goes into more people, three people directly linked to George Bush and the PTL. I'll do that later. Again, Time Magazine, May 24th, 1987, has a long segment on the scandals of Ronald Reagan. It also has a block on page 33, conspiracy theories. What kind of criminal prosecutions might grow out of the Iran-Contra affair? And again, the word conspiracy is finally being used, and not in a negative, kinky, dumb, casting aspersions on anybody who thinks it. This word again comes out in the press, and it's coming out more often. People's Daily World, May 19th, 1987. Memo reveals extent of White House conspiracy. And as I say, when I use that word 4, 5, 10, 12, 17 years ago, even last week, there are people whose hair stands up on end. That's too bad. There is a White House conspiracy. There have been White House conspiracies. Justice Department, CIA, Defense Department, State Department. They are conspiracies. By definition, a conspiracy is two or more people doing an illegal act. So I wish people would stop apologizing, those who study these things, that they are looking into conspiracy. Now, Time Magazine, May 25th, has a long article, a cover story on sleaze. I've been talking about Reagan's sleaze for years, mentioned different persons of his that were under investigation. In an hour a week, I can barely cover them. But page 18 says, morality among the supply-siders, more than 100 Reagan administration officials have faced allegations of questionable activities. Some are still in office, others resigned under a cloud. Many of the allegations were relatively minor, but the accumulation of cases produces a portrait of impropriety on a grand scale. Well, I don't think Mr. Admiral Poindexter Mr. Robert McFarlane from the NSC, from the Marines, I think their decisions to go to Libya on the provocateur lie of the Berlin bombing, the invasion of Grenada, on the lie that the students were in danger. Those are not minor offenses. Those are also conspiracies. But they're talking about the people closest to Ronald Reagan. And I think this leads up to why we're having this great diversionary now, the Gulf, Iran, Iraq situation, because Ronald Reagan has four of his very closest friends that are in deep, deep trouble. One is Michael Deaver, one is Raymond Donovan, one is Edwin Meese, certainly he's involved now in the WedTech, and Lynn Nofziger. And those people's careers have been just as close as bread and butter to Ronald Reagan, and hardly anybody can visit him without being tainted with these scandals or having murdered somebody. And of course, Mr. Wick of the USIA is one of his best friends, and he was illegally wiretapping or tapping telephones of people. The only reason these people haven't been prosecuted is the attorney general is selected by the president, and it's the president's friends that they're talking about. The New York Times has an article May the 11th A full page on one side is a discussion of Ronald Reagan. Aides to the president and the vice president are braced for bombshells. Resignation, in quotes, on the Reagan staff. And then alongside that page, Bush staff says, wait until it happens. And that is a warning there will be bombshells. Of course, a lot of people are going to cover this up much faster and heavier with the cover-up than we can imagine. One of the covers up this week was Canada finds no crimes. They're calling off the Iran arms investigation. Two Canadians, Ernest Miller and Donald Fraser, were under close scrutiny after William Casey revealed their connection, the Canadians, to threatening a lawsuit to cover $10 million involved in the Iran arms deal loaned by Mr. Khashoggi. And now they say that that was all a fabrication. We're not going to investigate it anymore, even though Mr. Khashoggi talks about why he loaned the $10 million in a long article in Washington Times with Arnaud de Borchgrave. The Washington Watch, a small newsletter, came out May 13, 1987, and it refers to Department of Defense and that group, the Peregrine, that I talked about that's so important. And April 25th, Philadelphia Inquirer also ran the story of Peregrine International Associates of Dallas and their connections to the Defense Department to commit assassination worldwide, including Central America. And they refer to training Contras and elite commando units in El Salvador, Honduras, and Peru. And this article says, according to U.S. Army Lieutenant General Samuel Wilson, former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, as quoted by one of the Peregrine employees, the DIA was picking up 90% of the CIA's work. The DIA was going to become the new CIA and leave the CIA out there to take the public licks. And again, the CIA is the front guy. The National Security Council and the DIA are not touched. On the NSC sits Fritz Kramer and Sven Kramer. Partner with Kramer is Daniel Graham, former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, and this same Mr. Wilson, Lieutenant General Samuel Wilson, the former head of the DIA, worked for Peregrine and had direct contact to the desks of the head of the DIA, the current one, and Caspar Weinberger. And he spells it out there, as I said in the Peregrine article before, and should do other broadcasts on it again. If anything comes down, you can always blame Casey, which they're doing, or North, or Owen, or Calero. These are the schleppers, or Secord, or Hakim. But the network stays intact, and as North explained to Robert Owen, who testified, if it all comes down, I'm the fall guy. Guardian has a article by Jack Calhoun, May 13th. Are the select committees preparing a whitewash? Of course they are. They're numbering countries. They're leaving names of the intelligence community out. They're now asking hard questions, but there's still a lot of material coming out, and it will be pouring out for years. There's a story in the San Francisco Chronicle, May 21st. Rebel leaders getting rich, ex-Contra says, and it tells about their apartments, their salaries. They're drawing large amounts of money, and there was another article in the Miami Herald of the fancy living. Going back to that article I did, or item 2 weeks in succession, two Oklahomans are charged with plot to assassinate Nicaraguan president. I referred to this Neil Livingston, who works with Gray and Company and with the Defense Department, who said Gaddafi should be killed and Ortega should be killed, and Robert Owen working for him, going up to the home of John Singlaub with Robert Brown, who sends the mercenaries out to kill, and the Defense Department wanting Ortega dead. These two men were in touch with Mr. Crane, Representative Crane from Illinois, who's a member of Western Goals with John Singlaub, Western Goals run by Spitz Channel. But one of the two men involved with this, Adenel Howard, was ready to pay $5 million for the murder. This article said that Mr. Howard he hasn't been arrested. He's believed to have left the state in search of employment, and you know he'll get employment. And also one of the two men is going to be called the unindicted co-conspirator. So these two are free to go off and make work with another team that might kill Daniel Ortega. They're not being punished, and that's an important thing, that even when the story breaks, the top people are let loose. He not only is looking for another state, he's looking for another country, probably will never be seen again. And then just finally, I want to do, as I say, more in the Gulf, an article from the Miami Herald, May the 10th, secret Contra pact linked to invasion of Falklands. and this has to do with the military junta in Argentina used by the Contras until the Falkland War broke out. I've talked about that before. And the relationship of our country, very cozy and kindly, towards the death squad captains in Argentina that were working in Central America with our Contras, the great freedom fighters. I'll take a one-minute break now and then continue going into the Iraq situation, the Persian Gulf. This is Mae Brussel, and as I say, we'll take a breather, and I'll update these articles. Just mentioning them doesn't really tell you how much material there is, but we'll get back to it later.